B. Collins.
Peter B. Collins, news and comment. It's Monday, December 18th, 2017. As we head into the holiday break here, I'll be podcasting through Wednesday, December 20th, and then we'll return to the podcast scene on Tuesday, January 2nd. And once again, it's a little overwhelming. So much news occurred since I last spoke to you on Friday that I'm going to try to jam it all in here in about half an hour. Let's see what we can do. There's a big rumor swirling in Washington, D.C., denied by the president, but stoked by Democrats who are very concerned. They think that during the holiday break, Trump is going to come up with some kind of a Saturday night massacre. That phrase came from Nixon and the Watergate experience. And as you may know, Watergate is where I cut my teeth as a cub talk show host in Chicago in the 1970s. So I know quite a bit about these kinds of investigations and how Nixon fired the special counsel who had been appointed to investigate Watergate. And as I hear the rumors circulate and the fears are building, I have to say that, number one, I'm a little doubtful about this. Now, with Trump, anything is possible, and the fact that he has denied he plans to fire Mueller, it really doesn't mean much. But politically, I think that he actually would hurt himself more, and of course, he may not be able to recognize that because he's impulsive and emotional. But I think it could make things further compounded in ways that would lead to anger by the Congress, a defensive move by Republicans to support impeachment over obstruction of justice. Because the average American can look at this and say, wow, he's firing this guy who's been investigating him, who he says doesn't have anything on him. No collusion, right? And because I'm skeptical of the larger picture of the allegations about meddling in the election by Russia, collusion between Russians and the Trump campaign, I remain doubtful that this will happen. Eric Holder, Obama's attorney general, went on Twitter yesterday to say that any such move would be an absolute red line. The latest battle is over emails that Mueller has commandeered. When I say commandeered, he used legal processes to get them, but he got copies of the emails that were sent and received by members of Trump's transition team. And Trump's lawyers claim that the transition team was not a government entity, and therefore these are not easily discoverable. But the emails were housed at the General Services Administration. That's a government agency. And with a subpoena, Mueller could have acquired them in August. That's when he got them. He also could have gotten permission from people like Mike Flynn as part of a plea deal to show me your emails. So this is occurring after last week, the dust-up over Peter Stroke and his friend who was also an investigator, Lisa Bloom, I think her name is, at the Justice Department. And they were working on the Hillary emails investigation. Then when that wound up, Stroke was assigned to the Trump investigation. And their text messages back and forth do raise eyebrows that Peter Stroke seemed to feel they needed a plan B in case Trump got elected. And I don't dismiss that. But it bears further investigation. There's certainly a lot more that we need to learn. So this will be duked out, obviously, for some time to come. But I want to take a moment here to talk about a series of tweets that a Facebook friend alerted me to. And I'm really disappointed in this friend. I won't out her, but she is a professor of political science. And she said that all of her friends must read this series of tweets by Seth Abramson. Now, who is Abramson? He's an American poet, editor, attorney, freelance journalist. He is a professor at the University of New Hampshire at Manchester. And he's been tweeting pretty regularly about Trump and Trump Russia for many months now. And his latest outing is an 11-part Twitter blast that starts off this way. There's now a rumor in Congress that Trump plans to fire Special Counsel Mueller on December 22nd. If this happens, it will trigger a constitutional crisis. This thread explains what's happening and what to do. Please read and share it widely. This is an actual emergency. Now, I worked in radio for a long time, and every week we had to do one of these EBS tests in the event of an actual emergency, right? So he then puts up an infographic, instructions for a constitutional crisis. Let me highlight what he says here. Trump cannot legally fire Mueller because the authority resides with the acting attorney general. And what we saw on the original Saturday Night Massacre was that Richard Nixon just kept firing people until he found somebody, a guy named Robert Bork, whom he later rewarded by, the Republicans rewarded by nominating him to a Supreme Court position that he was rejected for. But I'm sure somewhere in the Justice Department, there is somebody who will do the bidding of Trump if he says, I need a volunteer to fire Mueller. Now, Abramson goes on here. He says that Mueller has seen all the evidence. The public has seen only a fraction of it. As a former criminal attorney and investigator researching this since 2016, no exculpatory evidence has been found. All evidence points toward guilt. Now, Abramson doesn't even define guilt over what? Over collusion with Russia? Well, there is exculpatory evidence there in the form of Bill Binney's arguments and theorem. And this idea that Mueller has all the evidence and we've only seen a fraction of it, therefore we just have to believe the Trump-Russia narrative? And on what basis does Abramson say no exculpatory evidence has been found? Maybe he's got insiders at the Mueller investigation. But I find this a really dubious claim. Then he says that we don't hear from the media or congressional Republicans any evidence or claims that Trump and his associates are innocent. We hear nothing but scurrilous attacks against the investigators. This is what people who know they're caught do. Now, this is ridiculous speculation. And it doesn't prove anything. Then he says Rosenstein has made it clear that he won't fire Mueller without cause, doesn't see cause right now. And then he outlines some other options here, which I find pretty bizarre. Like that Trump would issue an executive order to name his own attorney general? Well, certainly the professor who's got a law degree from Harvard knows that it requires Senate confirmation to appoint a new attorney general, and this would create a real firestorm. Then the most dangerous option, he says, would be declaring himself able to fire Mueller and sending federal law enforcement officers to remove him and his agents from their office and lock down the premises. I think he's been watching Homeland. Because certainly, you know, these are possible scenarios. And I don't put anything past Trump. But Abramson really reveals himself. He says, Mueller is a good man. His whole biography confirms it. Now, that is such bullshit. Bob Mueller presided over the post-9/11 violation of the rights of Muslim Americans who were locked up in New York for months without trial or charge. He presided over the post-9/11 imposition of the Patriot Act authorities, the domestic wiretapping, the frame-up of hundreds of so-called domestic terrorism suspects, and I could go on. His treatment of John Kiriakou and Sybil Edmonds, both deeply problematic. So to claim that he is a good man, I think, displays a great deal of ignorance. And so I want to acknowledge that I don't have a crystal ball. Trump is unpredictable, unreliable, unhinged. And many things could happen during the holiday break. And while I'm not traveling anywhere, if circumstances warrant, I will break my holiday break and podcast if anything does warrant it. Over at Public Citizen, they have a website called TrumpIsNotAboveTheLaw.org, and more than 100,000 Americans have signed up to participate in protests in all 50 states if Trump attempts to fire Mueller or block his criminal investigation into the campaign. I'd love to see some real protest in this country. I'd like to see people, you know, you don't need to fire the special counsel for people to recognize how dangerous Trump is, what a liar he is, that he is an accused sexual offender who has evaded those issues. And we'll get to that in a moment when we talk about the blunder uttered by Doug Jones, the newly elected senator from Alabama. But a little bit more about the investigation. It's a very interesting reversal of roles because Trey Gowdy, the Republican who kept the Benghazi Inquisition open for years and came up with nothing, he is in a hurry to wrap up the House Intelligence Committee's investigation by the end of this year, which would be later this week. And they're rushing interrogations, what do they call them, interviews with individuals like Felix Sater, the Russian emigre and ex-convict who was a Trump associate, lived at Trump Tower, tried to work on business deals in Russia, probably helped launder Russian money into purchases of Trump-owned condos at the Tower and elsewhere. Now, Schiff has some reasonable complaints. He says, on the night before interviews, we get hundreds of pages of documents related to that person. Then they're not following up on interviews that we've already done. And requests to subpoena individuals have gone without any action. So this is clearly not a bipartisan investigation by this committee. They have very different agendas. And while I don't have any real confidence that there's a lot of there in the Trump-Russia investigation, an effort to cut it off is equally disturbing. On Friday, Trump proved what a two-faced idiot he is, because before he went to Quantico to address a graduate class of FBI agents and people who've taken training there from other law enforcement agencies, he went public and said, well, it's a shame what's happened with the FBI. We're going to rebuild the FBI. It'll be bigger and better than ever. Trump says that about everything. But it is very sad. When you look at those documents and how they're done, that is really, really disgraceful, and you have a lot of very angry people that are seeing that. Now, that's a pretty incoherent statement. But then he went to Quantico, where he just talked how much he loves cops and pandered to the law enforcement community by saying any cop killer should get the death penalty. Now, in attacking the FBI and calling it disgraceful, Trump is right, but for the wrong reasons. He only cares about his own case and the way that is being handled, so his self-interest really disqualifies his criticism. But he doesn't see the bigger picture, which I just articulated in relation to Bob Mueller's tenure at the FBI and the ongoing idiocy and infringement on our constitutional rights that occurs almost daily. Meanwhile, we are learning that under the Obama administration, DEA agents built a big case against McKesson, the San Francisco-based drug distributor. And this publicly traded drug cartel has processed orders and distributed millions of opioid pills over the last few years. And we know that more than 200,000 Americans have died from addiction and overdose related to opioid abuse. The Washington Post and 60 Minutes did a good job investigating these issues. And we learned that the case came up in about 2012. By 2014, they had investigated, and the investigators and the DEA team wanted to fine McKesson more than $1 billion and restrict or withdraw their permits to distribute opioids. But when it got to Washington, they were told they hadn't done enough work, there wasn't a strong enough case, and that the agency was going to settle. And so they settled for $150 million. The CEO of McKesson, John Hammergren, earns $100 million a year. And his take-home pay and those stock options and other bonuses are based on selling dangerous drugs. And they hired the right lawyers, many of whom had worked for the government, the Justice Department, or the DEA. And they got off with a slap on the wrist. And this occurred under the Obama administration. Keep that in mind. I'm not letting Trump off of any hook. But Obama really failed when it came to recognizing the danger from opioids and the grip that it has on our nation today. Every day I pause for a second and thank the people who support my work here at the Peter B. Collins Podcast with your subscriptions. And Andy Drawl, who's been a longtime listener since the syndicated radio show back in the 2009. He is a longtime subscriber, just renewed his annual. Paul Elsesser is one of my most dedicated philanthropists who mails a check in every month. Thank you very much, Paul. And Larry Bragman just took out a new subscription so he can listen to the podcast that he's featured on. Thank you, Larry. And thanks to each of you. If the end of the year is a reason that triggers you to get involved, to step up and write a check or get online and make a PayPal payment to set up a subscription, I'd be much obliged. You just visit peterbcollins.com, click on the menu button, pull it down. It takes you to become a subscriber. That's the sign-up page. And there you can choose $5, $10, $20 a month, a one-time contribution, the $50 annual subscription that can earn you a bonus book. So, please, do what you can. And I appreciate it. So, if it all works out tomorrow, Mitch McConnell plans to bring the conference committee report on the two tax bills, the tax cut bills that passed the House and the Senate, and try to ram that through. It's a little complicated because John McCain has returned to Arizona. He may be on his deathbed, but they're not saying. And so they won't have his vote. But Bob Corker has come to the rescue. And he's proving just what a poser he has been. Because Corker took on Trump over some issues, and then he grandstanded and said he wouldn't vote for this because it would ratchet up the deficit too much. He appeared principled for a moment. But on Friday, oh boy, did that principle dissolve. Just in a little puddle under little Bob Corker. Because he announced, without having read the conference committee report, that he was going to about-face and vote for the corporate and wealthy tax cuts. And now, I am not at this point asserting that Bob Corker changed his vote because he stands to make at least $1 million from a late secret addition to the tax bill. But it sure looks like it, and it sure stinks all the way here on the left coast. And Corker is outraged. He's penned a letter to Mitch McConnell saying, how did this provision that benefits me get into this tax bill? And it all has to do with the pass-through entities, partnerships, sole proprietorships, LLCs, and the new preferential tax treatment for those kinds of entities. And Corker is claiming that he didn't know what was in the bill and that someone had secretly inserted this provision, which all the experts say wasn't in the House or Senate bill, and it was inserted during conference, but they don't know who's responsible for it. Also, Paul Ryan and many other heavyweight Republicans in Congress would benefit from this. In the Times today, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders have a very rational op-ed. Of course, it won't work with the Republicans who are hell-bent to ram this through to protect their campaign contributions for next year and the foreseeable future. But Bernie and Elizabeth make a lot of good arguments that the tax giveaway is being rammed through before the new senator from Alabama, Doug Jones, can be seated. That's actually not a very strong argument, but it has some appeal, I guess. And, of course, they point out that by Friday, the Republicans have to get friendly with Democrats in order to pass budget and other actions to prevent a shutdown of the government. The Dreamers have to be dealt with. The Children's Health Insurance Program is still languishing. And they point out that mental health care is part of Obamacare. It's going to be sharply cut. with the effort to eliminate the personal mandate and just cause Obamacare to collapse, and that we also need better funding for the opioid epidemic that I talked about a moment ago. And if you recall, Republicans pledged as this process was getting started that they were going to simplify the filing process for most Americans. You can do it on a postcard or a two-page sheet of IRS form. No. And in fact, the complexity of the tax code is only increased by this so-called tax reform by Republicans. And so it's going to be a messy week. And it'll remain to be seen if the Democrats can end the hostage crisis of the Dreamers and put in some form of permanent relief for the DACA cohort. But it's very difficult to predict where this will go. Also, the FISA law expires on December 31st. As we've reported in the past, the Trump team seems to believe that even if it expires, the surveillance programs that it authorizes will continue because they're on a slightly different calendar until April. We'll see if that holds. I've got a double yellow journalism alert for The Guardian. Now, I look at The Guardian's website every day, primarily because they provide good critical coverage of American issues. They expose the police crisis in Chicago, for example, and the Holman Square secret detention center. But when it comes to some issues, The Guardian really stinks. And today, they ran one of those explainer pieces where, hey, you're an idiot. Here, we'll help you understand this complicated conspiracy theory called Russiagate. And they buy into the same bullshit that the New York Times and the Washington Post are pumping out. That they're anonymous sources and leaked documents that the public has no knowledge of lead to a trust me situation, and that they can tell us that Russia did meddle in our election, Russia did hack the DNC, Russia did give that to WikiLeaks, and of course there's no evidence for that, not publicly at this stage. So you can take a look at that on your own, but I've linked to the other piece of yellow journalism in The Guardian today, and it is a piece about the Syrian white helmets. Now, I want to be clear that I'm very skeptical of the white helmets, but I haven't seen any proof of exactly who they work for. I only know what their actions depict. And the role of the white helmets in the April 4th incident in Khan Shaykhun, Syria, where it's alleged that a chemical weapon was used, dropped by a Syrian airplane. And that account does not hold up to closer inspection. And Bob Perry at ConsortiumNews.com has done a great job. He read the details in the UN report that showed that people were being admitted to hospitals for alleged exposure to sarin before the Syrian jets flew over Khan Shaykhun. And it's the white helmets who provide the video footage that is used by international agencies to back up the unproven contention by the U.S. and others that Syria, the Syrian military, was responsible for the chemical release there. So I encourage you to read this because they basically say that Americans like me who are skeptical of the white helmets are simply falling for, we're naive idiots who are falling for Russian propaganda. And it's really insulting and insidious. And The Guardian instead should spill its ink and deploy its reporters to talk to MIT's Professor Ted Postol, who did a serious forensic look at the Khan Shaykhun incident. Instead, they bring us Vanessa Beely, the daughter of a former British diplomat who's been to Syria and who is a frequent user of Twitter. They also claim that alt-rights, that InfoWars, that's Alex Jones' site, repeated the conspiracy theory, describing the attack as staged by the White Helmets. I never said it was staged by the White Helmets. And neither did Bob Perry. The critics, the skeptics, have simply pointed out the inconsistencies in the original reports that are attributed to the White Helmets. Anyway, InfoWars asserted that White Helmets were funded by George Soros, and no responsible person has ever made that allegation. Now, I referenced earlier that Doug Jones, who narrowly defeated Roy Moore to win the remaining Senate term of Jeff Sessions in Alabama, Doug Jones is a lightweight. Doug Jones is part of the problem in Alabama, and we revealed this to you before the election based on the reporting of Roger Shuler at LegalSchnauzer.blogspot.com. And he said, look, Doug Jones is just different, not necessarily better, from Roy Moore. He's tied into the Riley machine. He failed in his defense efforts for Don Siegelman. And now Doug Jones went on CNN yesterday, and despite the fact that the only way he could have beaten Roy Moore was because of the pedophile accusations leveled against him, Doug Jones is saying that he doesn't support the call of fellow Democratic senators for Trump to resign because of the allegations leveled at him by more than a dozen women, including rape of a teenager in relation to Jeffrey Epstein's parties. So speaking to Jake Tapper, he said, the allegations about Trump were made before the election, and so people had an opportunity to judge before that election. This is a former federal prosecutor. I think we need to move on and not get distracted by those issues. Let's get on with the real issues that are facing people of this country right now. And I don't think that the president ought to resign at this point. We'll see how things go. But certainly those allegations aren't new, and he was elected with those allegations front and center. This is so disappointing. And it's just stupid. Politically speaking, and I've made this case, the Democrats should go full throttle on impeachment of Trump, whether it's about lying to the American people, whether it's about his unhinged management of the presidency, or about sexual assault allegations from before he was elected. There are many grounds to impeach Trump, starting with the government lease on his hotel in Washington, D.C., that he's in violation of, and the emoluments clause. You don't need Russiagate to bring down Trump. And yet, we see the party leadership is afraid of impeachment, afraid of calling for it. And I think that that cautiousness is a fundamental flaw in the opposition to Trump in this country. Hollywood has announced that they're hiring Professor Anita Hill, who had accused Clarence Thomas, the Supreme Court Justice, of sexual harassment in the 1991 confirmation hearings. I attended the early stages of those hearings before Anita Hill was introduced, and it was a shambles. George H.W. Bush had appointed an unqualified black man, but the white senators, including Ted Kennedy and Howell Heflin and Joe Biden, couldn't bring themselves to reject him because he was unqualified, and so they trotted out Anita Hill. So Hollywood has formed the Commission on Sexual Harassment and Advancing Inequality in the Advancing Equality in the Workplace, and Anita Hill is going to run it. Yesterday, Sports Illustrated dropped a story before the NFL kickoff about Jerry Richardson, the 81-year-old owner of the Carolina Panthers. And by this morning, Richardson has announced he is going to sell the team and exit the NFL. I don't know all of the allegations, but one summary says that he had female employees come to his office to rub his feet. I would need to know more before I consider that so offensive. I certainly just don't know the circumstances here. But the rumors are that Sean Combs, and I don't know what his official approved nickname is these days. I know it's not Puff Daddy. Steph Curry, the amazing basketball star for the Golden State Warriors here in San Francisco. They are planning to form a group to try to buy the team, and Combs has said that he would make Colin Kaepernick the quarterback if he could get control of that team. Here in San Francisco, Federal Appeals Court Judge Alex Kaczynski has resigned. I can't be an effective judge and simultaneously fight this battle, so I'm making the decision to retire immediately. It grieves me to learn that I caused any of my clerks to feel uncomfortable. That was never my intent, and for this I sincerely apologize. 15 women came forward naming Kaczynski. The first female politician has been burned by an allegation of this sort. Andrea Ramsey, age 56, is a retired business executive who's been running for a Republican congressional seat in Kansas. She is a Democrat, wanted to flip that seat, but she has bowed out because of an accusation that she sexually harassed a man. And she defended herself, saying, 12 years ago, I eliminated an employee's position. That man decided to bring a lawsuit against me. He named me in the allegations, claiming I fired him because he refused to have sex with me. That is a lie. But she doesn't get an opportunity to prove that. Her political ascendance has been halted. As I suspected, I have more news than I have time for today, so let me just wrap up with a couple of quick stories from Washington, D.C. As you know, there are 200 people facing charges of riot and disturbing the peace, property damage, stemming from the protests of Trump's inauguration last January 20th. And the first group of six defendants have had their cases sent to the jury. They started deliberating on Friday. And it's a fascinating case because they're trying to really press charges in cases that are typically dismissed. And the Superior Court judge, D.C. Superior Court Judge Lynn Leibovitz, gave some bizarre instructions to the jury. It's not a crime to be present or sympathize with the views of people who become violent during a demonstration. That's good instruction to a jury. But she also said it is not a defense that the defendant was also expressing his or her views at the time. And two of the people are independent journalists, two of these six men, people who are accused in the current pool. So I think that we already see prospects for appeals if these individuals are found guilty. But it is a remarkable case, and it's just unheard of that they have continued to push these charges against such a large group of people, and they are looking for some pretty stiff penalties. Now, the judge did dismiss the felony riot charges, but misdemeanor riot charges remain in place against many, if not all, of the defendants. And last week, this video kind of went viral. It was so unusual that a Republican senator and a Trump supporter from Louisiana, Senator Kennedy, was grilling nominees for the federal bench who had been put forward by Donald Trump. And one of the people who came up, the chair of the Federal Election Commission, Republican Matthew Peterson, he flunked a quiz on Law 101.
Have you ever tried a jury trial?
I have not.
Civil?
No.
Criminal?
No.
Bench?
No.
State or federal court?
I have not.
Okay. Have you ever taken a deposition?
When I first came out of law school.
How many depositions?
I would, I'd be struggling to remember.
Matthew Peterson announced today in a letter to the White House that he is withdrawing his nomination to serve on the very important D.C. Appeals Court. That is three nominees rejected just in recent weeks. But many more have been confirmed, young, almost exclusively white male conservatives who will be on the court for years to come. Thanks for listening to my news and comment podcast all the way to the end here. You can find it on YouTube. I remain your humble host, Peter B.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.